Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to Leading Off, the daily podcast that lets you catch up on the important things that you may have missed from the previous day. I'm your host, Dan Harris. You can find me on Twitter at DanHarris80. With me, as always, is my producer and former third-place finisher in the Mr. Universe contest, Brendan Tuma, and you can find him on Twitter at TooMuchTuma. Now, we've got a great show in store for you today, and we will start with my three biggest takeaways from yesterday, which were Tyler Glasnow continuing his ascension toward acehood, Jason Hayward and Trey Mancini suddenly becoming must-adds in all rotisserie leagues, and Matt Boyd showing that he just might be ready to stick around near fantasy rotation. After that, we'll run through everything else remotely newsworthy from yesterday, including Yu Darvish's and Nick Pivetta's poor starts, and some injury updates to some significant fantasy players. And then make sure to stick around to hear what I'm going to be watching closely for in today's games. But first, I've got to tell you about ESPN+. Look, here's what you get with ESPN+. With a membership, you see fewer ads across ESPN, whether you're on ESPN.com or the ESPN app. You get access to ESPN Plus exclusives, including 30 for 30s and original ESPN shows. And best of all, you can stream live sports on any mobile device, including whatever their MLB game of the day is. For today, you can see the underrated Shane Bieber go up against the exciting young Spencer Turnbull when the Indians take on the Tigers. ESPN Plus is just $4.99 per month, which is a steal. But if you want to try it out for free, you can get a 7-day free trial when you go to fantasypros.com/ESPN. That's fantasypros.com/ESPN for your free 7-day trial of ESPN+. Okay, let's start with the big takeaways from yesterday, beginning with Tyler Glasnow. Glasnow moved to 3-0 with a win over the White Sox yesterday, allowing just 3 base runners and recording 11 strikeouts over 6 scoreless innings. Through his first 3 starts, Glasnow has a 0.53 ERA, a 0.82 whip, and a 21-3 strikeout-to-walk ratio over 17 innings. And although he did squeeze in the start against the Giants, his other 2 starts were yesterday against the White Sox and the Astros, so he has not exactly been living the Matt Shoemaker good life over here. Glasnow got 16 swing strikes yesterday on just 85 pitches, and he touched 98 miles per hour with his fastball. Now, what's interesting about the start is that it was a bit atypical of Glasnow's other starts this year. Part of what encouraged me earlier was Glasnow throwing his fastball a bit less while relying on his curveball and his slider more. Last year, he threw his fastball about 70% of the time. This year, it had been closer to 62% of the time. Now, to be clear, Glasnow's fastball is outstanding, but a better pitch mix should, and certainly did, help Glasnow be more effective. But in this start, he went back to throwing his fastball about 70% of the time, same as last year. To me, this is actually a good thing. I do not think it means that Glasnow is reverting to his old form. I just think he's growing as a pitcher, and he's willing to use different pitch mixes when it suits him best. Either way, I am far from criticizing a guy with a 0.53 ERA at this point. Also, in case you needed another reminder to ignore spring training, Glasnow had a 10.38 ERA and a 2 whip this spring. He'll take on the Orioles in his next start. Meanwhile, where has this version of Jason Hayward been all my life? Hayward went 3-for-4 with a solo home run yesterday against the Pirates, and he's now slashing .371, .452, .714 this season. He also has 2 steals. Hayward is up to 4 home runs on the year. Do you know how many 4 homer months Hayward had in his 3 previous seasons with the Cubs? 0. So what's going on here? Hayward's hitting the ball pretty hard this year, with roughly a 39% hard contact rate as opposed to his 30% career mark. He's also hitting it in the air quite a bit, with a combined fly ball slash line drive rate of 57% compared to just 51% career. But look, Hayward's stats, they make me want to get something off my chest, and I apologize for this in advance, okay? I think advanced analytics are great. You should use them when evaluating players and when you are creating your projections, without question. But oftentimes, people fall in love with them and they think they are wholly indicative of a player's skill level. The truth is that metrics explain what has already happened. They are not necessarily predictive. So has Hayward been lucky so far? A little. Although he's hitting the ball harder than usual, he still ranks 80th in exit velocity. But he is swinging at more pitches in the strike zone and laying off more pitches out of the strike zone, and he's hitting more balls in the air. So the bottom line is that it is far from clear that this is the product of a change in approach or if it's just a good stretch for Hayward. At this point, regardless, you have to add him in any rotisserie league. Remember, he has stolen at least 20 bases 3 times, and he does have a 27 homer, 21 steal season to his ledger. But I am far from convinced that he's going to be a must-own player all year long. Trey Mancini homered again yesterday, and now has 6 on the season. He's currently slashing .362, .404, 787. In the American League, he currently ranks second in hits, homers, and RBI, third in slugging, and fourth in OPS. And that all sounds fluky, but since 2017, Mancini has 54 home runs. That is more than Anthony Rendon, Freddie Freeman, Eddie Rosario, Joey Votto, and Nicholas Castellanos. And the crazy part is that Mancini barely gets the ball in the air. Over the last two seasons, he's had a 52.9% ground ball rate, tied for fifth in all of Major League Baseball. This year so far, it is just 39%, and if Mancini can keep his number there, he should pretty easily surpass 30 homers, and he's locked into everyday playing time in a terrible Baltimore lineup. As with Hayward, it is not clear whether Mancini's numbers are intentional or just noise from a couple of good weeks, but it is certainly worth adding him to find out. And how about Matthew Boyd? Look, he failed to reach double-digit strikeouts against the Indians yesterday, but he allowed just one run on four hits over six innings while striking out six. He's currently at a 2.6 ERA, a 1.15 whip, and 29 strikeouts over 17 and a third innings. And I feel like casual fantasy owners just do not really want to buy this because it's Matthew Boyd. And I get it. He's on the Tigers. He has a career 5.02 ERA. His last name sounds like someone with a Brooklyn accent trying to say bird. Those are all legitimate reasons, including that last one, by the way. If you grew up in New York like I did, then you know what I'm talking about. But it's time to get over it, guys. Boyd had a strong second half last year with a 3.88 ERA and 72 strikeouts in 72 innings. He saw some major velocity gains toward the end of last year, and it has carried over this year. But really, the big thing is his slider. It is a truly elite pitch, just a 172 batting average against and 285 slugging percentage against last year. It's been equally effective this year. So what is the difference? Well, he's throwing it almost 37% of the time this year after only about 30% last year. And this is now a thing that pitchers do, right? Patrick Corbin and Masahiro Tanaka just throw their sliders nonstop. Matt Shoemaker pumps out that split-finger fastball all day long. So long as Boyd continues to lean on a slider like this, particularly with his added velocity, he could really be in for a fantastic season. Boyd is still owned in just 53% of leagues, and that number needs to be much higher. He will start against the Pirates in his next turn, where he's a must-start option. In addition to the big news, you missed plenty of other things yesterday. Thankfully, the Phillies were blown out by the Nationals, so we do not have to play Name That Phillies Closer for like the eighth day in a row. But if you are box score hopping today, you will notice some strange pitchers recording saves, including Roenis Elias for the Mariners. Remember when I said yesterday that Anthony Swarzak was the closer for the Mariners? Apparently I lied. Swarzak entered a tied game in the eighth inning with one out and a runner on second. He got out of the inning unscathed and actually earned the win. But it seems clear now that like in roughly 60% of bullpens out there, Swarzak is just not going to be a guy who pitches exclusively in the ninth inning. And he may lose out on the occasional save chance if he needs to be used in a higher leverage situation. You will also notice that Ryan Pressly got the save for the Astros yesterday. There is nothing to see here. Relax. Roberto Osuna had pitched on three consecutive days and in four out of five, so he was just getting a breather. But to be clear, if anything were to happen to Osuna, Pressly would immediately be a top five closer. Other notable saves yesterday include Raisel Iglesias locking down his first one of the season and Shane Green notching his league-leading eighth save. That's Shane Green and a league-leading eighth save. Shane Green. Look, Shane Green is not a very good pitcher, but he is still somehow available in 21% of leagues, so I have to keep pointing out how many saves he has. Pick him up, please. Yu Darvish had another uninspiring start yesterday, allowing five runs, four earned, over five and a third innings against the Pirates. He struck out four. Now maybe I am grasping at straws here, but I am encouraged by this start. First, and most importantly, he walked none after walking 11 in his first two starts. Yes, he did hit the opposing pitcher, but that is not a walk. Seriously, he threw strikes on nearly 69% of his pitches, which is a great sign for Darvish. Second, it was cold, man. It was like 42 degrees out there. Darvish's record when it's under 50 degrees coming in was 0-3 with a 5.06 ERA. Third, he made it into the sixth inning and needed just 77 pitches to get there. Both runners in the sixth inning, who the bullpen allowed to score, reached on really soft singles. Fourth, he was still hitting 93 miles per hour in the sixth inning. Now look, results are results. He did give up two long home runs despite the wind blowing in harshly. But if you are looking for some positives to take away, they are there. You'll just need to squint to find them. And I'm just going to get this out there right now so you can yell at me later. I am starting Darvish in Miami for his next start. No guts, no glory. And really, it could have been worse for Darvish. He could have been Nick Pivetta, who allowed 7 earned runs on 7 hits and 3 walks over 3 2/3 innings against the Nationals. Pivetta is up to a 9.45 ERA and a 2.18 whip on the season. Perhaps no pitcher engenders such backlash from fantasy owners as Pivetta, who is somewhat of a darling of fantasy analysts. Pivetta's FIP and XFIP were far better than his 4.77 ERA last year, largely because the Phillies' defense was atrocious. And he had an elite strikeout rate with a solid walk rate, two things that generally portend success. But it may be that Pivetta is just a guy who underperforms his peripherals because he just makes too many mistakes. For now, if you own Pivetta, I would hold, not drop. Keep him on your bench against the Mets in his next start and hope that he can turn it around. Remember, it is just 3 starts so far, guys. We've got a long way to go. Now, 2 pitchers who fared better than Darvish and Pivetta were Colin McHugh and Robbie Ray. McHugh struck out 9 in a win over the Yankees over 6 innings while allowing just 2 runs and 9 base runners. He got 14 swinging strikes with that slider that he loves to throw, and he continues to show that he can be a reliable starter. He now sits with a 2.65 ERA and 22 strikeouts in 17 innings, and will take on the A's in his next start. As for Ray, he didn't factor into the decision against the Rangers, but he allowed just 1 run and 3 base runners while striking out 10 in 5 innings. Ray got just 11 swinging strikes, but had a whopping 27 called strikes, and he hit 95 miles per hour on the radar gun at one point. Of course, most importantly, Ray walked just 1 batter after walking 5 in each of his first 2 starts. Full disclosure, I am not a Robbie Ray fan. Just take everything I've said about Freddy Peralta, walk it back about 50%, and you have my feelings on Ray. But if you own him, you should be encouraged by the start, of course, and you can feel free to deploy him against the Braves in Atlanta in his next start. We saw plenty of home runs yesterday, including 2 each from Tommy Pham, Chris Davis, and Jose Altuve. These were Pham's first extra base hits of the season, so that is quite a way to break that streak. As for Altuve, he looks fully recovered from his knee injury from last year, and Davis should be in line for another 40 homer season, though a slump is obviously coming because he is currently batting .254, and we know that he will be batting .247 by season's end. Austin Meadows only went yard once yesterday, but he did go 3-for-5 with 3 RBI, and he now has 2 home runs and 7 RBI in his last 2 games. In case you needed a reminder of how early it is, 2 days ago, Meadows was batting .235, and he is now batting .341. Jay Bruce left last night's game against the Royals with tightness in his left Achilles. It is unclear how he sustained the injury or how serious it is, but if he needs to miss time, that would at least clear playing time for Daniel Vogelbach, who we talked about yesterday and who currently leads the majors in average exit velocity. Travis Shaw left last night's game against the Angels after being hit by a pitch on his right hand. X-rays came back negative, and he should be fine going forward. As expected, both Mike Trout and Alex Bregman missed Wednesday's games with their injuries, Trout with his groin, Bregman with his hamstring. Both may be in the lineup on Friday, but frankly, I would not be opposed to their teams giving them a few extra days to rest to be safe. So far, however, both injuries sound minor, and an IL stint does not seem to be in the cards. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was moved to AAA after going 4-for-15 in his single-A rehab assignment. If the Blue Jays promote Vladdy after this Friday, they will gain an extra year of control, so expect to see him in the majors shortly. Max Scherzer may have his next start pushed back a bit after he was hit on the ankle by a comebacker against the Mets. Scherzer is scheduled to take on the Pirates on Saturday, but he could be replaced by Anibal Sanchez on normal rest if Scherzer can't make the start. Again, there is nothing to suggest that an IL stint is imminent. Chris Paddock had a scheduled start pushed back until Friday, just as a way to manage his workload. He will start against the Diamondbacks in what should be a good test for the youngster. Gary Sanchez missed Wednesday's game with leg tightness, but he did pinch hit, and he should be fine going forward. Finally, the A's signed Edwin Jackson to a minor league deal. Jackson actually had a 3.33 ERA in 92 innings with the A's last year, but he struck out just 6.6 batters per 9. Still, in AL-only leagues, you can put Jackson on your watch list. So those are some things you may have missed yesterday. For today, I'm going to be tuning in closely to the Dodgers-Cardinals game to see how Walker Buehler fares. Buehler has had a weird year thus far, after missing most of spring training, and he struck out just 4 batters in 8 innings. If he can shut down a strong Cardinals lineup, I will be fully encouraged that there is absolutely nothing to worry about with the youngster. And that's going to do it for today's version of Leading Off. Make sure to subscribe to the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast. Check your feed every weekday morning. Again, you can always find me on Twitter at DanHarris80 or Brendan at TooMuchTuma if you want to talk about anything at all. Enjoy your Thursday, everyone. I'll catch you tomorrow.